I think it speaks to communicating more than just the words or ideas in our minds. We have to be able to communicate what's central in meaning to one another. We go beyond the facts to the implication for the persons who are involved and those also impacted. Welcome back to Business Second Opinion Podcast. We're going to take a minute and thank our sponsor here at Business Second Opinion, Guayaki. Right now, actually, I've got a fresh can of Enlightenment sitting cold right next to me, and man, is it good. Guayaki brews an enlivening beverage from a naturally caffeinated and nourishing leaf and species of holly that you may know as mate. It contains 24 vitamins and minerals, 15 amino acids, and abundant polyphenols. Even the Pasteur Institute and the Paris Scientific Society concluded in 1964 that it's difficult to find a plant in any area of the world equal to mate in nutritional value, and that yerba mate practically contains all the vitamins necessary to sustain life. On top of that, they support community and ecosystem regeneration, bringing together art, music, and celebrations in many locations. Stay up to date on their events at guayaki.com. Business Second Opinion Podcast digs deep to explore questions about business and business practice. Ones you may not know you need to be asking, we believe you should. And in the process of examining them, we give you a second opinion. As you know by now, usually a contrarian opinion, but one that's tested and proven to give you the outcomes you want without the nasty side effects. I'm Zach Swartow, and with me as always is Carol Sanford, our in-house positive contrarian, responding to big hard questions with a radically different take. Hey, Carol.
I am so glad to hear your voice, Zach, and know you're doing well.
Yeah, you too, Carol. I'm really glad that we continue to persevere through this and continue to do these podcasts because they're super fun, and I think our audience is really, really enjoying them. So at the moment, I know that we're all seeking ways to make sense of the world living in a pandemic, the first one in our lifetime. At times, this whole thing honestly leaves me feeling confused, scared, and frustrated. So for the sake of our sanity and yours, we want to do a show to support our devoted listeners that uplifts how they think about life. So Carol, let's give the folks a little taste of what we're going to be talking about today.
You know, it has suddenly occurred to me how many times people have asked, given what we describe about a regenerative business, regenerative organization, what in the world does that feel like when you work there? You know, if they were to design an organization, what would they see happening? Well, you could even shift that, I guess, actually to saying a society that worked regeneratively. There's one aspect of life that gets interpreted at way too narrow a level, a narrow of understanding, that's a part of an answer to that. And I thought we might tackle that today. And that's the subject of authenticity.
Great. Okay. So there are a number of HBR articles that I found, but two I pulled out in particular that I read that I felt a little bit muddied the waters of this topic a bit, but I think could give some explanation that might help us see a different or how the traditional world versus the regenerative world is driven to operate. The first article is from the October 26, 2015 issue of HBR called When Authenticity Does More Harm Than Good. And the second is called The Authenticity Paradox from January-February article issue of earlier from that same year.
So it sounds like what they were doing is trying to define authenticity, which I think is a very misunderstood idea. And that's a great place to start. Can you give a little overview to help our listeners know what did they say?
Yeah, sure. So the authors are coming at this from a couple of angles. So in the Authenticity Paradox article, the author Ibarra points out that what she believes are key aspects of authenticity, like leading from one's true self, maintaining strict coherence from what you say and do, and then making values-based choices. However, she notes that these are fraught with their own challenges and situations, like, you know, ones in which you're receiving negative feedback or trying to sell one's ideas and kind of a leadership position. And, you know, the third one being taking charge in maybe a new or unfamiliar role. In these situations, leaders struggle quite a bit to find their center and try to lead from a North Star, so to speak. So in the second article, When Authenticity Does More Harm Than Good, authenticity again is defined as, quote, the degree to which one is true to one's personality, spirit, or character, despite external pressures.
Yeah, so I can see already from what you're saying that she's looking at this as an individual thing. Am I as an individual authentic and not considering a systems level. But I'm really curious about where you saw as you went through it that the whole her concept fell short and came from, I guess, what I call a narrower worldview.
Yeah, so it's funny. There's a framework that came to mind as useful here that we in the school call modes of behavior, but we could also call it reactive, ego, and purposeful, or these three different kind of mindsets of reactive, ego, and purposeful. So for me, I actually use this framework when working on me to more accurately calibrate the mindset from which I'm working. In these articles, I notice that there are many of the pressures that lead the folks in the case studies into more reactive and ego-focused modes of behavior. So the authors try to design solutions to fix those mindsets that generally fall in between kind of reactive and ego's places. What drops out, unfortunately, is a third way to see situations from a more purposeful frame. In a purposeful mode of thinking, I find I'm able to think beyond my reptilian brain and my ego and to think of larger forces at work and entities who I may not have considered previously.
Yeah, so they're falling in again to this idea that somebody out there would fix it for us so that we don't have to deal with the reactive and ego. How do they speak about the experience of authenticity, or do they? And what seems to be missing from how they speak about it?
Yeah, you're spot on. So they talk about authenticity as though being authentic is this double-edged sword, where they conflate authenticity with automatic and old, outdated behaviors that can get leaders into trouble. But what seems to me is missing here is an ability to examine how their biases about authenticity in the first case as a paradox or polarity, and in the other one as this kind of mechanical training problem, keep them from understanding other ways of pursuing it as a way of being.
Yeah, so I'm beginning to see their definition of authenticity is, as I was saying a little bit earlier, it's about the individual and whether they're really able to be their self, say what they want, and not get in trouble or not cause harm. But I'd like to offer a different definition, and it comes from what we call a regenerative paradigm. Now, true self, which is used in one case, is a grand idea, but it is rarely experienced by most of us. We have many what we call little selves, little eyes, who compete for attention. And I see this in me too, one way of seeing something and another, and they compete to get my attention. And I need a way to do what the ancient philosophers call get a single eye instead of a bunch of little eyes. I think that's what she's calling true self, and that actually shows up in the ancient philosophies too. Those philosophers point to a fact that we are often scattered and we're leading from our ego and our mechanical thoughts. Do you ever have that experience, Zach, or is it just me?
All the time. So I will definitely rush to judgment on some aspect of our business, like, you know, this client in a client situation or another project that we're engaging with. And I notice that I do it automatically without even thinking. And it feels like, well, almost like someone else took over inside my head at that moment. And it's not until I take a moment to stop and reflect that I notice that was an I that I probably don't want driving the decision at that time. Or I was reacting to a story I had about that situation rather than actually being able to see the situation much more clearly.
So think about for a moment, if you have an idea and you think it's an authentic idea, I mean, it's me having that idea and I speak in any one of those moments. That's what's the craziness of what they're suggesting. I think it might be helpful to give an idea of some of how our work at Carl Sanford Institute offers regenerative education, which is to build the capability of people in the organization to do it, not to structure something so they won't have trouble. And it is a bit about how you learn to build a true self as an organization's way of operating in each individual in it. So here's my shift in definition. I think authenticity is not a thing, but it's a process capability. It's not an action we take and speak, but something we have to build in us to be able to see ourselves and the world differently. It's not about saying what I think about a subject or a person as feedback, advice, or an opinion. It's, I think, really more about me creating a state of being in myself that I can see the whole of a situation and I can be reflective about that whole and maybe for that whole. This requires me having to manage all those things you were just talking about that are going on in me that contaminate what I can see and I'm at in the moment called my authentic self. I can't be an authentic self with all those filters and buffers. What does that look like for you, Zach?
One of the ways I do that, which I've touched on before, is using a framework, you know, like I mentioned with modes of behavior, but that's crucial to me being able to manage my state first and foremost. I notice this comes up quite often when I'm kind of leaking frustrated, angry, or fearful energy, like a leaky boat is kind of what it feels like. But for me, this comes up most often when I'm fearful, which is fertile ground given state of the world at the moment. Fear, by the way, we define as an energy drain as the process where we often find ourselves unable to appropriately relate to the situation at hand, which I think everyone can feel familiar with. How I start takes a combination of what we referred to before as self-observing and then self-remembering. It's like I have to watch my mind at work from a third-person perspective in order to see the ditch I've fallen into and which aspect of my personality might be driving my thinking at that moment. And so from there, I find if I notice how and what I'm reacting to and where my ego is taking over, only then can I start to see an opportunity to contribute in a larger way.
So the real risk from what they're suggesting, and I think this is pretty common, is that we think of authenticity to be taken at sort of face value. Either we agree with it or we don't, but it's what somebody thinks rather than there's all this stuff going on that has fear and concern and anxiety and arrogance and all that stuff at work. And so you have to go through a bit of a process like you're about to be authentic to even find the I that wants to speak. What changes when you can manage all that for you?
Yeah, I think what changes is the sense that I can pursue kind of a mutual success of all these folks that are affected and the systems that are affected, and then dedicate how I'm engaging to more than myself, even to the greater whole in which we and they are a part.
Yeah, and you just completed my definition of the regenerative level of thought for authenticity. So let me say the whole thing, putting together what I think you have offered. It's a process capability. You just described a process that seeks mutual success. It's not me winning or getting you to see something. And then that dedication you just spoke of to the greater whole, that means more than me, that which I'm nested in and which we're embedded. In our regenerative seed communities, we engage many different roles and directions for educators, for entrepreneurs, for change agents, and also for business teams who work with us monthly in sessions to build that process capability. And in it, one of the most important things, which I think we ought to touch on a little bit here, is three principles that you can use to catch yourself in all the challenges you just mentioned to determine whether you can authentically be speaking.
Yeah, and I actually like this idea of a process capability because it means we can learn to achieve authenticity and not just figure out what has to be suggested by the definition the HBR author suggests. What I realize here is that I could always be authentic. It's so easy to fall into, you know, this kind of what's in the situation that's affecting me and speak from that place. Or let me try to stop doing some harm here. Or even let me just do what I see as good for some specific others and not be thinking about the whole. And you can't be regenerative with that. What we're talking about here is the idea of paradigm blindness versus moving towards consciousness.
Yeah, so what I hear you doing is speaking about something we covered in a couple of podcasts back early, a couple of years ago. We call the seven first principles. And of course, it's in my last two books also. And it says that you cannot work regeneratively. In other words, you can't work for a whole unless you can begin with a whole in mind. If you begin with parts, this a little bit of that, this direction, this problem, then you can't really see what you're working on. And then, of course, there's another one of the first principles is development. And that means what you've been speaking to this whole time, develop ourselves. And that development is kind of like a hinge between three inner and three outer of these first principles that holds it all together. We have to develop ourselves in a process way. So maybe now it would be appropriate to look at the principles of authenticity and get a regenerative view of that. And then we could begin to show how we use that to develop these various communities who meet with us. Are you up for reading the first principle of authenticity?
Sure. So the first one is to speak and engage thinking about the meaning to you and others of what's happening or unfolding. In other words, what's behind the surface?
Okay. So what does that say about the offerings that we have at Carol Sanford Institute?
I think it speaks to communicating more than just the words or ideas in our minds. We have to be able to communicate what's central in meaning to one another. We go beyond the facts to the implication for the persons who are involved and those also impacted.
And that's a bit of a hard thing to do, right? Because we have a strong tendency to look at how it impacts us. And we may not even ask what the meaning is, but to be able to engage with people in a way we're thinking about the impact on them really matters. How is that different than what the authors of the HBR articles were proposing?
I mean, our process strikes me as just that, an unfolding process and work to engage in, rather than a problem to solve. It's also not data that we should just count, but a path that leads to an ability to see situations of people more clearly and fully.
Yeah, I mean, I'm thinking about how much you have to stop yourself in time to actually ask yourself, hey, if I were listening as this other person is listening, what would I hear? What would I be seeing as implications and meaning? And wow, I mean, that is just huge. And that's not included in anything you've described from those HBR articles. It's all about what do I want to convey and is it all right to convey it? So, all right, I just think that first principle is awesome. What's the second principle from a regenerative view of authenticity?
Well, so the seven first principles say to start and continue with a whole in mind, not a part or a fragment. This is what the second principle of authenticity is really about here. So it proposes when we describe a situation, event, or any other experience to others who are not there, we avoid being partial.
Yeah. I want to tell the little bit I want you to know, and I'm not going to tell you what other people said or thought or might think. What does that call on you to be intentional about?
Yeah, I feel like I have to strive to convey and discover the whole of an experience rather than just excluding any portion to limit someone's ability to develop a more full understanding of the meaning and implications for themselves. In other words, nothing is positioned for the impact I want, but from all perspectives. So I have to speak from the essence of the situation and represent the same situation in the same way, no matter the audience or situation, because I'm intending to include the whole of all the thinking involved and affected.
Right. And think about how often when we go tell somebody what went on in an event, we tell what we think we should or they should hear. And then we go to the next person and we frame it completely differently because we're really trying to fix the mind of people rather than giving them, as you just said, the opportunity to understand and create their own meaning for it. So what is the effect of that thought on you personally? How would it even change conversations you currently have? You know, if you were to reflect on it, would you do any of those differently?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I'm noticing I'm definitely in some recent conversations in our business, the way I've been approaching it has been more about self-preservation out of fear rather than choosing to represent things more clearly.
Wow. So now we've got a pretty good idea about what that second principle is. Can you compare that to anything they did in the Harvard Business Review?
Yeah, I think if the authors were here, they would tell me to go back to those conversations maybe and swipe right, as they said with the Fitbit kind of true self app that they were suggesting, since I wasn't authentic, or to learn from someone else, like a role model, how they would have engaged in those situations. Neither of which is really about working a process within me to represent things more clearly for all those involved.
Yeah, no, none of that is about making sure the whole story is seen. It's still making you better at speaking and being an influencer. Must be time to do the third principle as a regenerative view of authenticity.
Right. So number three, engage receptively. So in this principle, I need to be able to take into account the other person's and other systems' aspirations. I have to avoid the tendency to project my feelings and desires onto others, and instead consider it core to my responsibility to continually increase all of our abilities to see through others' eyes.
Wow. Excuse me. I'm just thinking about the impact of that, trying to always see through others' eyes. In fact, all three of these, but that last one seems like a critical path or a way to increase my own understanding of all that's going on and to interact with others from this whole and meaningful perspective. That is such a different experience of what it means to be authentic, is to be able to see the whole, understand the whole, be receptive to what it's seeing.
Yeah, I notice actually that I have to open myself up to the energies and directionality inherent in the patterns of what I'm working on and in, and that I and others are nested in these interrelated systems together.
So how do we reframe these HBR authors, you know, to reconceive of what it is that the way they're presenting it? I mean, do you have some way to kind of summarize what you've come out of after reading those and thinking about these three principles? You know, in other words, what do we need to do to practice this regenerative view?
Yeah, I mean, simply put, they need to add to this capability of being able to see through others' eyes, right? Like Ibarra offers this idea called outsight at one point, but this is really about trying on different personalities and situations and doesn't really explore the aspirations of others, which is really critical to what we just touched on here.
Yeah, so there's that piece about really making sure that we're receptive to others. And you add that on top of the one about you really want to be representing the whole every time you speak. And before that, you have to spend time understanding the meaning of all the things that are going on. Boy, I have a really shifted view when I can hold that idea about authenticity. How about you?
Yeah, thank you so much for taking the time to do this, Carol. This has been really helpful.
So if you want more details on what we've done here, please check the show notes. They're more in the form now of a transcript so you can see the entire flow and help get your eyes into a regenerative paradigm way of looking at the world.
Carol Sanford Institute has been offering online development for almost a decade. And so I think, or I hope by now, we're pretty good at it. A set of live workshops where we bring together a dozen or so individuals or teams over time to develop their own regenerative-based interpretations of how living systems thinking can inform their strategy and leadership. And as a regenerative way to architect a business, organization, or life with these ideas.
We do believe that things work so much better in community. So those processes that Zach just described definitely are in communities with businesses multiples together. But we have a new community, which I mentioned earlier, the Regenerative Educator Community. It's for education and development professionals or people who play that role somewhere in what they do, or anyone who considers themselves an educator. That community is established to enable members to work with a developmental epistemology. And if you're an educator, you probably know what that means. But if you don't, it means how you believe people learn and change. Particularly, you move from an expert view to an experiential developmental one based on the seven first principles of regeneration. If you are curious about that, check out seed-communities.com to learn more. And you can then look under Regenerative Life Offerings. It's the same place you'll find the work on women entrepreneurs. So check all those communities out. And keep listening to Business Second Opinion piece for more ideas on working from the regenerative paradigm and practices. And my new book is out, The Regenerative Life, which is filled with stories at the individual and career level of how people have worked with this. And you can get an extensive workbook and a book club where I do engagements with you in addition to what's in the book.
And thanks again to our sponsors at Guayaki in your pursuit of regeneration with high integrity. By the way, if you want to get one of our Get a Second Opinion mugs, send us your article and topics on practices in business that need a second opinion. You can email us at carol@businesssecondopinion.com or find us on Twitter at @biz_second_opinion. If we use it to develop an episode, you get a mug. Also, your ratings and reviews on any platform help people find us and spread the word. Also, don't forget to sign up for our newsletter so you can get connections to the show notes and much more.
And finally, we should thank our sponsors again. In addition to Guayaki, who sponsors the entire podcast, Numi Tea sponsors the show notes. And Babson College is also our sponsor for the Regenerative Business Summit and Prize, which happens annually and happens online, which nowadays looks like a good thing we've been doing that and gotten pretty good at it. Check out the Business Second Opinion website, and you can get more information on the podcast generally. And then be sure and join Numi Tea as a champion of our podcast.
This has been Business Second Opinion.